Why is the shopping cart always in the top right of the screen?
How do companies predict my purchases?
Why do prices end in 9?
Why do fast food companies use red and yellow in their logos?
Why do restaurants always have one expensive menu item?
Researchers, marketers, and very curious people seek the answers for how we make decisions and how we choose products. ClickSuasion finds the secrets that companies use and shares them with you.
Why do I feel better when I bought the last remaining airline ticket?
How do I make choices based on colors and fonts?
To get inside the minds of others, we've asked a professional speaker, a consumer psychologist with a PhD in psychology, in business psychology, the chief behavioral officer of ClickSuasion Labs, and the host of the ClickSuasion podcast, Dr. Michael Barbera, to join us. Mike. So I have to ask you a couple of questions first, and then we're going to turn it over to the audience, and they're going to tell us the questions that they have. When we first started, I had a whole list of conversation topics that I wanted to ask you, and I was going to blindside you, but then you came in crippled with crutches, and I really felt I couldn't do that then. So hopefully, if you don't mind, I'm going to do that now. We asked our members some of the issues that are most vexing to them, and a lot of them talked about how do we figure out what the customer wants. Now, we can ask them, and they may or may not tell us, or they may lie to us, or may they just blow us off. How do we find out what they really want?
We really don't know, and it's very difficult to know. Most of the majority of the greatest products and services ever made are something that was already there. Airbnb is just a hotel, Uber is just a taxi. Who knew they wanted a cordless phone when they had a rotary phone? Who knew they wanted a cell phone when they had a rotary phone? Who knew they wanted an iPhone when they had the Motorola Razr? It's creating something new and solving that problem. So if we go about our day and we do thousands of things each day and we make countless decisions, and we don't think about them. But it's that one decision that we're like, that's not right. That should be better. This should be a little different. There's your pain point. You take that problem and you turn it into a product or a service, and now you've identified something that probably other people can benefit from as well, too.
Now, as I understand it, you have a laboratory that you use with ClickSuasion to get beyond what they say, what the customer says, and actually measure what's going on in their brain and what's going on in their body to get verification that they're actually telling us the truth. Or maybe perhaps insights that they themselves don't even recognize. Tell us a little bit about that.
We can have logistics problems, we can have sales problems, marketing problems, product design problems. It all comes down to people problems. At the end of the day, it all comes down to a person. And if I was to ask somebody, or we ask each other, would you buy this product? Why wouldn't you buy this product? You're probably going to give an answer that you think is true, but not necessarily the right answer. 100 plus years ago, if Ford was to ask what people wanted, they would have said faster horses. You know, they didn't know what the automobile was until it was presented to them. So we have to find ways to show the consumer what they really want or how they engage with specific products. For example, if you look at any website, Target, Walmart, Amazon, anything with a shopping cart, the shopping cart's typically in the right-hand corner. And that's there because the first place the human eye looks is in the top right-hand corner. Many years ago when journalism was doing paper journalism, actual newspaper was doing well, the most expensive place to buy ad space was in the top right-hand corner because human eye tracking, we put on a fancy pair of glasses, and we put a newspaper in front of you or a screen, and we can tell you where you go. So we can watch where maybe your mouse goes, your hand goes, or they're on the track bar, but your eyes go somewhere else. So what is the consumer actually watching or doing, and what are they actually doing with their hands? Two different things.
Now, how do you measure that? As I understand that there are some ways, some technologies that you're employing that can help us peer inside their brains.
There's countless ways to measure it. You don't have to have the fancy human eye tracking equipment. You don't have to have all the fancy analytics. You can have an Excel or a spreadsheet or a Google sheet and start counting whatever someone is doing. Just make sure it's accurate across the board. So for example, we'll put RFID chips on shopping carts in grocery stores. And as the shopping carts are zipping out through the aisles, we can see on a heat map or near real time where people are stopping, how long they're stopping for, and then we can push products in certain places based upon consumer behavior. And then when you scan that loyalty rewards card for your favorite grocery store, and you're like, I'm gonna get some cents off today, I saved 16 cents. Oh, by the way, when the cashier says, oh, you saved $42 today. No, I spent 106. It's a little ways of reframing the message and making the consumer feel better. But it's also putting the consumer in a position of empowerment and finding out how they engage. So when you scan that loyalty rewards card, and you're not just getting a discount, the company is getting your information, your data in exchange. Well, every time Mike buys ketchup, he buys turkey. Weird combination, and now we're seeing a trend that other people are doing the same thing. We're gonna start putting ketchup next to the turkey.
Now, there are surveys that we put out, and we put out surveys for this conference, and there's a number of people that reply to these surveys, and there are a number of people that don't. Now, we've experimented, like, for example, today with the fortune cookies. How many of you guys ate the fortune cookies? Right? So the fortune cookies were provided by Mike, and thank you. That was really nice of you, and we took the liberty of lacing them with RFID tags. So we can track what people are doing for the short term. We don't want it, it's nothing permanent, you know. But have you seen, how are these, the big companies, the big boys that have the budgets, how are they using this biometric kind of data to see our behavior and track it without us knowing?
Everything we do is being measured. Every time you drive on the highway, more than likely your GPS in your car is tracking data on where you go. You use Google Maps, Apple Maps, or Waze, it's tracking all your data. You don't have your name tied. It doesn't say Sam Smith went from point A to point B. You're just a number. And it's tracking everywhere you go, your speed, where you stop, how long you stop for. Your insurance company is buying that data, and they're using that to recreate policies. There's endless ways to track information. So one of the problems we also often get is somebody will call us and say, hey Mike, we have this problem with X product and we don't know why the consumers are doing this behavior. We have no data on it. That's a lie, you have data. Everyone here is sitting on data. We always hear, we don't have any data, because most people think that data is some screen from the Matrix with, you know, green numbers on a black screen, binary ones and zeros going up and down. If you've got Google Analytics, you've got a CRM platform, you've got a point of sale system, you've got data, and you're sitting on more of it than you know. And you don't have to be a data scientist. You can play with the data on the dashboard, and you can find those trends, and you can see when people come to you, when they're leaving you, where they're coming from. And if you're identifying that a specific segment of the population is coming to you from a certain place, target that certain place, but also dig further back. Where are they coming from that place from? What's the behavior before that? If we created a fictitious, if everyone in this room, if we got together and we came up with a brand new car seat, we're gonna say, this is gonna be the greatest car seat ever. And you don't have to do yoga to tie it into the seat. It's one snap and it's in. Pretty cool product, right? Who is the customer? You have parents, expecting parents. Who's the user? The baby. But the baby's not gonna swipe the credit card. Where do expecting mothers go? When you have a traditional North American family, you have a male and a female. Who makes the decision on the safety of the child? Who makes the decision on the price of the purchase? Now you're targeting two different people, two different behaviors. So how do you target those two people, two different behaviors, and two different decision-making processes? Safety versus money. So now if you were targeting expecting mothers, where would you go? And you start by stereotyping. If you think that you have no data whatsoever, or you're in the ideation phase, or concept phase, start by stereotyping. Where would expecting mothers go? And then start building your marketing strategy from there. And you'll find creative ways to branch out.
Now, I haven't been following you everywhere, but I certainly, just on social media, I've been following some of your, shall we say, interests. And one of them is, I think, going to be familiar with everybody in the audience in a little while, bathrooms. And those people who swallow the RFID tags, please, you know, hold on for a while, as long as you can. But you follow bathrooms. Why in the world have you got all these posts about bathrooms, toilets?
Two words, message framing.
Those aren't the words I would have picked up. Message framing?
Message framing. Actually, walking in this building today, I took a photo of the restroom sign downstairs at the first floor. When you leave, go downstairs and go to that side of the building, look at the restroom sign. It says, it's two signs. One, it says single occupancy restroom, I think was the verbiage. And the one below it was lactation station. Okay, so why single occupancy over restroom? Why single occupancy over shared? Why single occupancy over gender neutral? What we've learned through social psychology is that the majority of people will not accept the restroom if it says gender neutral on it. But if you reframe the message to say shared, single occupancy, the whole debate of gender neutral goes out the window and people are willing to use it. It's the same thing in sales. Nobody, if someone says, you need to sign this document, everyone's mother here told them as a kid, never sign anything. Don't sign that, you better get an attorney. We'll okay it, we'll authorize it, we'll approve it, but we won't sign it. So by simple message framing or changing the perception or how it's presented, people are more likely to accept something. I'll go one more further. Restaurants are a great way to express how consumers make decisions. We've all been to a restaurant, okay? I can pretty much guarantee that. When you're in a restaurant looking at that menu, if the menu has dollar signs on it, a dollar sign plus 23 and whatever cents, you're more than likely to spend less money because the dollar sign now takes your thought process from an experience of having that meal with loved ones to a transaction.
So this brings up an interesting point. So you're looking at a problem from a different lens and looking at something, if you will, if you're framing a term, right, for lack of a better analogy. But you want to bring a new idea, a new concept to a market, like much like when you had to explain to your wife why you're taking pictures of bathrooms instead of her, right? How do we communicate a new idea, a new concept to a market that may or may not be ready for it?
That gets tough, and that can get expensive because now you have to educate a specific target audience. So if you reframe the message, if you call, you know, what was VRBO, Vacation Rentals by Owner, which has been around for a long time, which is now competing with Airbnb, now it's known as Airbnb. We don't even say VRBO anymore. When we do an internet search, we don't Yahoo something. I'm going to search that real quick. We Google it. Google's become synonymous with internet searches. So to create a newly framed message, a new a way to label something, it's tough. It's easy to come up with a name, you come up with cool phrases, but then does it translate? Does the consumer understand what it means? And in most cases, if it's a new product, a new service, if it's innovative, probably not. But there's also reasons for reframing as well, too. It gives you intellectual property protection in the future, because no one else is using that, potentially, maybe, depends on what it is. It can get tough, so you have to educate the consumer. And if you can find ways to teach them, video, big hint right there, it's a good way to do it. So I'll share some more consumer psychology stuff about that. So if you can show video, you're more than likely to keep the consumer's or user's attention. When you go to a website, within 3 to 5 seconds, you know if you're going to leave. You're not counting 1,000, 2,000, okay, I'm out of here. But cognitively, you know you're about to leave because it's not engaging, it doesn't look like a good website, it doesn't mean anything to you. But if a video pops up and starts playing, now they've got your attention. Now you've got your consumer's attention because now there's content. You've captured the eye. The same thing goes to placing videos on Facebook. You can put videos on Facebook two different ways. You can upload a video directly to Facebook, or you can add a link from YouTube or another video service. If you upload it from a third-party service like YouTube, the video won't play automatically, so you have to take an extra click. So you scroll, 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 click. That extra step will significantly decrease the number of people that will watch your video because humans are lazy. We're all lazy. We don't want to actually, I have to click something? Oh my goodness, that is too much work. But if that video plays automatically, your finger will stop scrolling, and we know that through heat maps and where the finger goes and where it stops. And we know they'll watch the video. So if you make it play automatically, you make it video, make it interesting, keep the consumers engaged.
keep the consumers engaged. Is there any other communication tips that you would have for us? Anything that from your research that we're missing when we try to communicate with customers?
I'd say be unique, but also what is unique? You know, that's a very broad term. Do what other people are not doing. I'll be completely transparent. I'll share what we do at ClickSuasion Labs. Our marketing doesn't look like marketing. You won't get a sales phone call. You won't get an you might get an email, but you won't be pushing any call to action. What we do is we market our organization as if it's 1978. We don't want to be known as the company that's using email marketing. That's just looking like everybody else. So we find ways to make a standout that everyone else is not doing.
Then in this new world where we're trying to give something of value to somebody, we're checking in on them in a meaningful way, how exactly do we sell to them then?
Well, we don't want to sell. If the product or service is really that good, you don't have to be sold. Everyone in here probably has a smartphone in the pocket for the most part. No one here had a high pressure sales tactics to get sold a smartphone. And if we poll the room, more than likely we're gonna split near 50-50 iPhone and Android. And when you go into a Verizon store or a Sprint location, an Apple store, no one's pressuring you to make a sale. If the product or service is that good, it will speak for itself. And your other consumers or users will also advocate for that. Get other people to advocate. Social proof is huge in marketing and sales. So if there's one thing that you take away from this entire night, well, for me at least, from my portion, is this. The most persuasive thing you can do is show that other people are doing it too. The most persuasive thing you could do is show that other people are doing it too. Think if we're going back to that business and we have that car seat. We're not gonna sell the car seat, an empty car seat in an empty minivan. Doesn't look right, but we're gonna put people in the photo with it. If we were selling tickets to a sporting event, we're gonna show a full stadium and people cheering and eating hot dogs and drinking beer. We're gonna show people having fun because that key E word is experience.
Being the stupidest person in the room is a good thing. I find it very easy, frankly. or at least surprisingly easy. How do we create a community? How can I create a group of people that will engage and cross-pollinate ideas and build something greater than, you know, amplify what the signal that I'm trying to create?
Incentives. Incentives is the key way to do it. And incentives aren't always a Starbucks gift card or an Amazon gift card. Find something that's really personal to that individual or that segment of the population, whether it be use of the product or service upon release or something else. But incentivize it. And also food. If you can bring food into somewhere, you're going to fill some seats in. People will show up. You feed people. And you got their attention.
Tony? Before you leave, Tony's showing us the food is still there, and we have some leftovers. But Tony's also going to tell us the survey. He doesn't want to do this yet. So to build that community incentives, we want to be able to allow people to share the questions that they have, to have them sort of say, these are the biggest challenges we have as a community. One person may have something that is a challenge to them, but they don't know that other people are having the same sort of issue. Oftentimes as innovators, we get very isolated and that we don't have the opportunity to cross-pollinate with other people that are trying to work on similar problems until we get something like this. You know, there are a lot of, we've got this gig economy going where we're not working in big corporations anymore. We're working in silos with one person or two people or five people or something like that. And it gets harder. One of the examples that we're having is this fireside chat. Instead of having a lecture, a speech or something like that, we want to bring an interactivity where people can actually communicate their thoughts, but we also recognize from conferences that we've had in the past that there are a lot of introverts who getting up and asking questions is not their favorite thing, right? So they want to be able to ask a question, but doing it a little less, more anonymously. And so we've been looking at ways that how can we get those introverts who have these ideas that are fantastic, but they don't have that desire to go up and stand in front of everybody and ask the question.
It's scary.
It is. And so we have, unfortunately, I'm an extrovert, so I have no problem talking in front of people. And in fact, people have a problem with me talking in front of people. So they, I can see how I could drown somebody out. Inadvertent, but I could still do that. So have you seen technology being used in that regard to get at that voice of the customer or someone who is reluctant to stand up and raise their hand, but at the same time they have a spectacular idea?
So technology, someone said it earlier, their challenge was targeting consumers that are digital and ones that are in person. Someone said that, I don't know where they are, they're hiding somewhere. I got you. I'm not gonna shake your hand though. If you walk into a car dealership, and what's the first thing that's gonna happen? You're gonna get swamped by how many different car salespeople, right? And we run away. I'm just looking, and you run away. Leave, get in the car and leave. But then you'll go online, you'll browse. We've made digital marketing, digital e-commerce more personal. You get an email, it's like, hi Sid, how are you today? You put something in your Target shopping cart, you X out of the browser, now what happens? You get an email, you forgot something, someone else said it, or you said it. We're gonna target you with your mother wants you to buy. It's exactly what it is. It's all data. It's another person in here said, I only have one data point. Who was that? Was it you, sir? But you also said that you get 500,000 data points daily. So I assume there's a date attached to every one of those?
Yeah.
Yeah, so now you have two data points. Now we start backwards. You've got more. You've got more than you think you do, I promise you. The technology doesn't have to be the most cutting edge. It can be user voice. It can be Google Analytics. It could be a Google Sheet or an Excel spreadsheet. It's how you want to apply it and what you want to measure. So I will scale back a little bit. I'll say, don't stress so much the technology. Don't stress so much the numbers and where the data is coming from. Ask yourself, what is it that we don't know about the product? What is it that we don't know about the service? You may know these five great things about it. You may know these five horrible things, but what don't we know? And that's the things we have to answer, because if we find the things that we don't know, we'll find ways to make it better, to make the consumer more willing to engage with it, and of course get the consumer to come back and keep engaging with it. Think of your cell phone. Well, everyone here maybe buys a cell phone once a year, once every 2 years. You use it how many hours a day, nonstop, click, 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 scroll, 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 click, 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 click. It doesn't break, it keeps working. Imagine you ran your car as much as you did your cell phone. But as soon as that cell phone stops working for a millisecond, how mad do you get? You get really mad, like, Apple, I hate you. Damn you, Android. It's been working for the last 2 years, no problem. But the minute it stopped working, that's when we identify its faults. Not when it's working. We don't think about how great it is when it's working. We don't think about it when it's not working.
That's a daunting task.
Yeah, it's tough.
So you, for us, you are our fractional chief behavioral officer.
I'll take that.
You'll take it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much, and thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Thanks for listening to ClickSuasion. Subscribe to the podcast, read our research, and get in touch with us at ClickSuasion.com. You can also find us on Twitter with the handle @ClickSuasion.